The opinions expressed on the Rob Report are the opinions of the hosts, participating callers, and or listener emails, texts, and letters, and are not necessarily the opinions of WDAY or Form Communications.
Welcome to your afternoon. It's Rob Port, 970 WDAY AM, 93.1 FM, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. Well, it was primary day in North Dakota last night, and all sorts of interesting things going on in the various races. It was more interesting, I think, than I expected, given that, at least on the statewide ballot, and that's kind of the perspective I'm looking at it from, that the statewide ballot, there were no ballot measures. There were no really competitive races, even nomination races, but I think some interesting things to talk about in terms of turnout. A lot of people griping today about the low turnout. I got some things to say about that. Historically, it actually wasn't that low. Historically, turnout was about average for a midterm election year. I would say even I went so far as to describe it as strong turnout because, again, statewide, we didn't really have any competitive races. We didn't have any ballot measures statewide. So to put up an average number in a midterm primary vote with nothing really competitive going on the statewide ballot, to me, it was a pretty strong turnout. Now, of course, there were lots of local races. Dave Pepcorn and Tony Garrick held on to their Fargo City Commission seats. There's a lot of interesting local races from around the region. There were also some interesting numbers in terms of Republican voters versus Democratic voters, which I think we could talk about as well. So we'll talk about all that. Plus, coming up here at 1 o'clock, newly minted U.S. House candidate. He's nominated now. He's not just the presumptive nominee. He is now the nominee. Kelly Armstrong joins me. We'll talk about his race transitioning from the primary to the general election. Some interesting numbers in that race. That was actually a four-way race, Ben. It was Kelly Armstrong. Tom Campbell was still on the race, even though he had withdrawn. He lost. Tom Campbell lost the endorsement at the NDG OP convention in April to Armstrong and filed to put himself on the primary, but then subsequently dropped out and endorsed Armstrong. But yet he still managed to get 17,692 votes, over 26%. 26.85% of the statewide vote. And then Tiffany Abertroth actually made a decent showing, 8.92% of the vote. And Paul Schaffner, Ben, Paul Schaffner.
Yes.
Who got, I think, one delegate vote at the NDGOP convention, who pleaded, was convicted of soliciting a prostitute last year.
Oh man.
Got almost 8% of the vote.
Really?
5,203 votes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That surprised me.
That's something.
Armstrong in that race got 30,054 votes. That's good for over 56% of the vote. Strong showing. But a couple things. I mean, one thing, why did Campbell get so many votes? I think that's an interesting question to ask. Now, some people are saying, well, it's just uninformed voters showing up and thinking Campbell was still in the race. His name's on the ballot, so they assume he's on the race, so they voted for him. Maybe that's it. Unfortunately, there are a lot of ill-informed voters who show up and cast ballots. I wish if you all the time we talk about get out and vote, get out and vote, get out and vote. If you're in a position where you don't even know whether or not the candidates who are on the ballot are actually still in the race, maybe you shouldn't be voting, at least not in that race. I mean, if you're in a position where you're just kind of voting on party affiliation, maybe you shouldn't be voting. Just a thought. Just a thought. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. Armstrong did, despite, you know, I mean, it was a four-way race. He got 56% of the vote. It was a convincing one. He won every single county statewide except for one, Ben.
Which one?
He lost in Trail County, where Tiffany Abertroth's family is from Trail. She won her home county.
Gotcha.
She won in Trail County. Kelly Armstrong did almost also beat out Campbell, excuse me, in his legislative district. He's a state senator from District 19. He's not up for re-election, but Armstrong almost beat him there. So anyway, some interesting numbers there. We'll talk about that with Kelly Armstrong. And also Kevin Kramer is going to be on. And Ben, I feel like we got a lot to talk about with Kevin Kramer. He's got a lot going on with his Senate race and a lot of things going on in that race. So anyway, we'll talk with Kevin. It'll be open phones too. So if you want to join in, you want to ask the congressman questions, you certainly can. We do that at 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk@wday.com or tweet me at Rob Port. All right. So let's talk about some of the overall turnout numbers, which I think are pretty interesting. First of all, we saw a 19.66% voter turnout number, according to the Secretary of State's unofficial results so far. It's probably not going to change much from that. 114,340 votes. That's pretty average. That's actually, if we go back, in fact, it's more. We actually had...
At the last, the 2014 primary, it's up by 2% from that year.
In terms of the voter turnout,
yeah.
In terms of actual votes, in the 2014 midterm, we had 93,624. And I've seen a lot of people comparing, like they're just going, you know, they're comparing all the elections from like the last 10 years or whatever.
Yep.
You got to realize some of these are midterm elections. Midterm election years just see lower turnout. And I'm not saying that's okay. I'm not saying that that's a good thing. What I'm just saying is that for all the people who are griping about this, there's actually... turnout was pretty normal. And as a matter of fact, you go back to 2008 was a presidential election year, right? 2008, we elected President Barack Obama. The total number of votes we saw on the in the general election in 2008, a presidential year, actually about 12,000 fewer votes in 2008 than we saw in the midterm primary in 2018.
Wow.
So, that yeah, is, I mean, it's I mean, these that, go but... up and down, and the primary ballots are a lot of times, you know, for instance, you go back, you look at the 2016 primary. I mean, that was voter turnout was significantly higher. It was 24.51%. Mm-hmm. But we had ballot measures. We also had one barn burner of a gubernatorial race in the Republican primary between Doug Burgum and Wayne Stengem. So, I mean, these turnouts, I mean, they go up, they go down. 2012. We saw a massive turnout. Primary turnout in 2012 was almost 33%. Just to put that in perspective, it was 19.66% yesterday. It was almost 33% in 2012. But you know what was going on the June ballot in 2012, Ben?
In North Dakota, I do not.
We had a statewide ballot measure to eliminate property taxes.
Okay, that definitely
drove a lot of people to the polls.
Yeah?
So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, these things go up and down. I think when there's an issue that people care about, they show up and vote. When there's an issue, when there aren't issues that they care so much about, they don't. So I think there's some people, you know, obviously voter ID has been a big part of this narrative about people showing up and vote. And we've heard a lot of hot political rhetoric about voter suppression from people like Senator Heidi Heitkamp, people like Secretary of State candidate Josh Boshe. And I just don't see it. As a matter of fact, in terms of the voter ID law, we saw, I think, very few problems last night. As a matter of fact, this is a quote from Jennifer Cook. She's an attorney, a regional attorney with the ACLU. She said, I quote, this was in Fargo Forum story. She said, I quote, it's good to know voter ID issues are seemingly non-existent at the polls.
Yeah, and that's the
that's the ACLU.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know Michael Monplaisir, the Cass County Auditor, he said that it was running smoothly for the entire day. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always
some... There's a hiccup or two, but...
It's a system that is very predicated on human beings.
Right.
And so there's always going to be an issue. There's always going to be a mix-up. Somebody brought the line. I think there was an issue north of Bismarck last night where... you know, they didn't get the right, especially because with the primary election, there's a lot of different ballots. Like you go in and, you know, depending on where you live, you get different ballots and it can be confusing at times, and it's a human system and you want it to be run well. There was a few wrinkles, but overall, I think it went well. And overall, I think voter ID wasn't an issue. And as a matter of fact, if you look at turnout numbers, and again, I'm just looking at primaries here today. But if you look at turnout numbers going back almost 20 years to 2000, we've made a lot of changes to voter ID laws over the time. Turnout numbers have stayed pretty consistent. Mm-hmm. You know, there's ups, there's downs. A lot of that has to do with sometimes we have like a big ballot measure. Sometimes we have a really competitive race. But for the most part, it's about the same as it ever was. Now, we could have an argument overall. Should more people be engaging in the political process? Should more people be getting out and voting? I would say informing themselves first and then voting. Yes, absolutely. Particularly because in June, we see a lot of these local races. We see city commission races. We see county commission races. We see sheriff's races, park board races, school board races. These are important races.
Mm-hmm. And these local races, you know, for like, you know, city of Fargo, city of West Fargo, for voters, that's ultimately, in my mind, going to affect them more than a lot of national races.
Yeah.
At least like in the immediate, it's going to affect them more directly.
Yeah, I mean, local government's where the rubber hits the road.
Yeah.
So those local races, unfortunately, they generally speaking, they seem to get the least amount of attention. But if you want to talk about the most direct impact on the way your day-to-day life, right? I mean, who you elect for president isn't going to have a lot to do with that road construction down at the end of the street and how much it's costing you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it has a little bit to do once it trickles down through all the various levels of government. But for the most part, is what it is.
Right.
So anyway, we I saw some gripe that the turnout was low. I think yes, it was low. Turnout in primary years is always low. But last night's was not outside of historical norms.
No. It was average.
It was average.
Yeah.
It was about average, about what we expect. And I would even go so far as to say strong in context. Because, again, there were no really competitive statewide races. There were no really competitive – there were no ballot measures. You know, there were obviously local races driving people to the polls, but, you know, more people should have more people should show up for that sort of thing. So we got all that. Next, and we're going to take a break here, but next I want to get into – because it's really interesting because obviously because it's a primary ballot, when you go in – there's a difference. We have Republican voters and we have Democratic voters, right? Because you go in and you have to choose which party's candidates you're going to be voting for. You don't get to mix and match. And there's a big difference between the number of people who select Republican ballots and the number of people who select Democratic ballots. It's been getting good for Republicans over the years. It's been getting really bad for North Dakota Democrats over the years. We'll talk about those numbers coming up next. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk@wday.com. Don't go away. Welcome back. Rob Port, 970 WDAY AM, 93.1 FM, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. So there's a couple other interesting things to talk about with last night's primary results. One is the partisan turnout. And the other thing I'm going to get into a little bit later in the show is the Secretary of State race. What is going on there? Will Gardner won last night. He won. Mm-hmm. Now, Will Gardner, of course, is the Republican candidate. He was convicted of a disorderly conduct charge in 2006, and it turns out that charge was for peeping in dorm room windows at female students at North Dakota State University with his pants undone. After that broke news, he announced that he was resigning from the race. But here's the thing. Legally, he couldn't take himself off the primary ballot. So he won last night by default, and he actually got a lot of, I thought a lot of people would leave that blank. They didn't leave it blank. He ended up still getting about 52,000 votes. The average for Republican candidates was a little under 60,000 votes, Republican statewide candidates. So he got a lot of votes. And I don't know if that's people just, you know, going down and just not thinking about it, just checking all the Republican candidates. I don't know. Maybe a lot of people did that. But I thought, you know, with all the attention he got, that a lot of people would have just skipped that race. They didn't. But anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment. What I want to talk about now is partisan turnout, because I think that's another very important number. There's a ratio, because when you go, again, when you go to the primary ballot, when you go to the ballot box on primary day, you have to choose if you're going to vote for the Republican slate of candidates. I mean, obviously, you're going to vote on local elections and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to, like, the statewide races, when it comes to things like legislative races, you have to decide if you're going to vote on the Republican ballot or the Democratic ballot. And so we can actually track this. We can track these numbers, how many votes. And so what I actually do, the way I do it, is I go through and I average out all of the votes that each party's candidates got in the different races, right? So, you know, you have candidates in each race, and then you average the number of votes each of those candidates received. And then you compare those averages. And so that's what I did. And on average, you know, over the years, Republicans have averaged, you know, a little bit more than one, you know, from about 1.5 to about 2 voters for every 1 Democratic vote. That's the ratio, about 1.5 to 2 to every 1 Democratic voter. Now, in 2016, Ben, that ratio was 5.84. Almost 6 Republican voters for every Democratic voter.
Wow.
Now, I suspect what happened there is Democrats didn't have any competitive statewide races. Meanwhile, Republicans had a barn burner between Doug Burgum and Wayne Stengem. Yep. And I think what happened is there was a big crossover. People, you don't have to, when you go to the poll, you don't have to be a Republican or have paid dues or anything like that to vote in. I feel like I have to explain all this primary stuff because most of the people listening, let's face it, given the 19% turnout, most of you didn't vote yesterday. So I feel like I have to explain how all this works. You could vote on either ticket. You know, you don't have to be. So Democrats, I think a lot of Democrats with not a lot going on their own ballot crossed over and voted for in the gubernatorial race for Republicans, which saw, you know, really pushed up that number, 5.84. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yesterday it was 1.9. Now, what's interesting, though, is if we just look at the raw number of votes, just the number of ballots cast, again, this is an average of the statewide candidates, but if we look at the average number of ballots cast for Republican candidates versus the average number of ballots cast for Democratic candidates over the years going back to 2000, and I wish I could show it. You should go to sayanythingblog.com and check out this chart because it's really pretty amazing. You've got to see the trend lines because the trend are not good for Democrats. I mean, they have been steadily declining. I mean, if you want to complain about turnout numbers, actual voter turnout for Republicans has been trending up since the 2000 election in the primary, right? Because we can't really. It's the primary is different because, you know, you're selecting which ballot, but in the primary, the number of Republican voters turning out and voting on Republican ballots has gone up steadily. For Democrats, it's gone down steadily. Now, that's not really a surprise to me, Ben. I mean, you look at the outcomes on the general election day, we have seen a steady decline. I mean, from 2000, Democrats now hold no statewide offices in state government. They have seen their presence in the legislature declined steadily, and at nowhere during that time have they held majorities in either the state house or the state senate. They've also seen, you know, they've had since 2008, even their federal delegation. I mean, it used to be all Democratic. We had Kent Conrad, Byron Dorgan, Earl Pomeroy. They're all gone now. Pomeroy defeated. Conrad and Dorgan retired. Only one Democrat has won on the statewide ballot since 2008, as I say often, and that's Heidi Heitkamp. So it's not surprising when you look at these numbers. I mean, this is it. And it's this is important because if you look at what's going on in these races right now, why are Democrats working so hard to move to the center in an election year? Why are they working themselves so hard to align themselves with Donald Trump? Well, I mean, the obvious low-hanging fruit answer is, well, it's a Republican state. Yeah, but it's also that it's getting more so. A Republican state. I mean, even through last night's primary, if you look at the trend line, this state's still trending more Republican. You know, insofar as we can use the number of people who show up on primary day and select the Republican ballot. Now, I think that's a pretty important, I think that's a pretty significant data point. Obviously, it's not the only data point, but it's an important one. And what it tells us is this is a state that's getting more Republican. And not only just getting more Republican, but also getting less Democratic, right? Which is why increasingly statewide candidates for the Democrats have to kind of sound like Republicans. And you almost wonder if it sets up a vicious cycle for Democrats where they start to lose people out of their base. And so they move to the center to try to peel off Republican voters. And then that just alienates more people in their base. Vicious cycle, right? Because there comes a point where, you know, Democrats act too much like Republicans, and people just say, why not just elect the Republicans?
Right.
Anyway, Interesting data. I have a full post up on it at sayanythingblog.com. I've got all the graphs and charts and everything. You want to take a look at it. If you nerd out on this stuff like I do, it's worth looking at. And I think really helps people understand why things are the way they are politically in North Dakota right now. All right, more to come. We're going to talk about this Will Gardner thing with Secretary of State. He dropped out because of the whole Peeping Tom thing, but he has to decline the nomination to stay off the general election ballot. Should he? What do you think? Will he? 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk@wday.com. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back. Rob Report 970, WDAY AM 93.1 FM. All right, Ben, let's talk about the Secretary of State race. It's a complicated situation. I'll set it up for people who haven't been following along that closely. Will Gardner, an incumbent Secretary of State, Al Jagger, were in a competition earlier this year. They went to the NDGOP convention. At the convention, delegates endorsed Will Gardner over Al Jagger by a strong margin.
Yep.
So that's the thing that happened. Now, the primary is different. This is a little confusing because the political parties hold conventions, and at those conventions they endorse candidates, but the candidates actually get nominated on the ballot. You can lose at the primary, you can lose at the convention, but still run to the primary. That's what, if you look at the House race, that's what Tiffany Abentroth and Paul Shafter did, is they lost at the NDGOP convention, but ran on the statewide primary anyway. So what happened is after Will Gardner won at the convention, it came out that he had a 2006 disorderly conduct charge for being a Peeping Tom. It's widely reported. It prompted Gardner withdrawing from the race. Now, by saying withdrawing, essentially probably a more accurate way to put it is he suspended his campaign.
Right.
So he's not campaigning anymore. So now what's got to happen, though, is because he was on the primary ballot, right? By winning the convention, he's on the primary ballot. By being on the primary ballot, he couldn't take himself off. The deadline for removing himself from that ballot had passed before the scandal broke, so he couldn't get himself off the primary ballot. He won the primary ballot last night by default, which was expected, especially because if you have a lot of I think it is a little shameful that 54,000 people voted for him. He withdrew from the race for pretty darn good reasons. He's clearly unfit for office, but 54,000 people voted for him anyway. I don't know what those people are doing. Do they still want Will Gardner to be the candidate, or are they just voting a straight Republican ticket and just going down? And maybe there's even some confusion. During the break, Ben, I was actually commenting on my blog, on sayanythingblog.com, and one of the people said, well, I voted for him just because I had to vote a Republican ticket. And I pointed out to him, I said, well, you can leave races blank on the ballot.
Right.
Like, you don't have to vote for every race.
That's always an option.
The voter didn't know. The commenter didn't know that. He goes, oh, wow, I thought if I left some blank, my vote wouldn't count.
I can see a lot of people thinking that, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, you don't have to. That's actually why if you look down the races, no, there'll be different vote totals. Like, the Senate race might have a different vote total than the House race.
Yeah.
And that's because a different number of people voted, because some people skipped one or the other. That's just, you're allowed to do that. But maybe people were confused, and maybe, but I don't, 54,000 people? I don't know. That's a lot. But he won by default. So what's going to happen now is if Gardner can decline the nomination. Okay. So what he can do is he can basically, I think he just, my understanding is he just writes a letter basically to the Secretary of State's office that says, I decline the nomination, something along those lines, at which point his name won't then go on the general election ballot. Now, Republicans really want this to happen, or at least some Republicans anyway, because what happens is if Gardner is on the ballot, now the Secretary of State race turns into a four-way race, because you have Gardner on the ballot as the Republican, you have Josh Boucher on the candidate or on the ballot as the Democratic candidate, you have Roland Reimers on the ballot as the Libertarian candidate, and then you have incumbent Secretary of State Al Jagger on the ballot as an independent. Now, Jagger has been collecting his signatures to put himself on the statewide ballot as an independent. He announced that he would do that after Gardner. Initially, when Gardner defeated him at the convention, Jagger said he wouldn't run to the primary. After Gardner dropped out, Jagger got back in. He's going to run as an independent. Now, you can understand people are going to be confused, especially straight ticket voters who are going down just voting for all the Republicans. They're not going to vote for Al Jagger. They're going to vote for Will Gardner. Will Gardner cannot win on the general election ballot. I don't see a path to victory there. If his name's on the ballot, what's going to happen is Gardner and Jagger are going to split the Republican vote, and Josh Boshay will win. And I can understand Democrats probably pretty desperately would like to keep Will Gardner on the ballot. I think that's a terrible, cynical thing to do. Why would you want to win an election? Because you, through some technicality of law or what have you, you keep a flawed candidate who has no business in the race on the ballot? It's wrong. But really, the ball is in Will Gardner's court right now. And there's a question. I can tell you there's a lot of nervousness among Republicans that he might not withdraw. Now, I contacted the Secretary of State's office this morning, and this is why I spoke with, emailed with election specialist Leanne Al Oliver. She told me we have not heard anything as of now. That was per an 11:24 a.m. email. She said we have never, then I asked her if they would be announcing when he sends it in. She says we have never done that before when someone declined the nomination, so I don't think we will this time. He just wouldn't be listed on the certified list of candidates for the general election. That's what she told me. She said, I would think he wouldn't turn in a letter until after the results are final at the state canvassing board, which is going to be June 22nd. So she's saying that there may be, maybe there's nothing to worry about because Gardner has until June 22nd to, you know, after June 22nd is when the election results are actually certified. She's saying maybe he'll turn in his letter after that. I don't know. I contacted Dawson Schefter with the NDGOP. He told me, I quote, we have not heard anything new from Will. Previously, Will had apparently told Republican leaders that he would, in fact, be declining the nomination. Nothing's happened yet. Will it happen? I don't know. I think until it does happen, there's going to be a lot of nervous Republicans because if Gardner stays in the race, and I will tell you, there are some out there. There is a faction of whatever you want to call them, anti-establishment Republicans or what have you, there is a faction that want him to stay in the race.
Yep.
Well, there is a...
You would
sorry,
think
go ahead.
Gardner himself would understand that for the Republicans right now, he just isn't the best bet given his history and that if he wanted his party to succeed, he would still just, you know, step down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, you know, as a practical matter, barring some other unforeseen circumstance, he can't win. He's not going to win. If he stays on the ballot, all he can do is lose. And in losing, right, also cause, you know, another Republican candidate to lose and hand it to Democrats. And given everything that Will Gardner said about Josh Boshay during when he was still in the race, I don't think he wants Josh Boshay to be North Dakota's Secretary of State.
Mm-hmm.
So why would he do that? But there is a faction of Republicans, anti-establishment Republicans, or whatever you want to call them, libertarian wing Republicans, although I hesitate to call them libertarians because they don't often seem very libertarian to me, but whatever. They're out there, and you can see them on social media. They are urging Gardner to stay in the race. They took it as a great victory, that Gardner was a great victory over the incumbent Al Jagger. I don't know why they see it that way. I was happy Jagger lost. I have been a very sharp critic of Jagger over the years. Now, given a choice between Jagger and Boshay, I think I would choose Jagger. But I've been advocating that maybe Jagger, it was time for Jagger to move on, to get somebody else in that office. I was happy when Gardner, not knowing at the time what he had on his criminal record, I was happy to see Gardner win at the NDGOP convention. But knowing what we know about his criminal record now, he's not fit for office.
No.
We can do better than that. Al Jagger is a better fit for office than Will Gardner is because of Will Gardner's criminal record. There's just no two ways about it. But there are some people out there, and I hear them saying, you know, what Will Gardner did, it's not worse than a DUI. And you look at Josh Boshay's record, and he's got a couple of reckless driving, alcohol-related reckless driving convictions on his record. And so what they're saying is Will Gardner's criminal record is not as bad as Josh Boshay's criminal record. Now, that's bunk, but that's the argument they make. Why should our guy drop out when Josh Boshay's staying in the race and he's got a worse criminal record? I think that's the logic that they're applying, and it's baloney. It's bogus.
It's two very different kinds of crimes, and yes, Josh Boshay should be asked about, you know, those incidents. Those should
and he has
up.
Been.
Yeah.
I've asked him about it.
Yeah.
They're not new. They've been around for a while. He's been asked about them numerous times. When I've spoken to him on this program. In fact, I think the last time he was on, I asked him about him. Yeah. He said, you know, he paid his fines. He was extremely embarrassed about him. There was a mistake mm-hmm. that he made. He acknowledged it, and voters will have to judge him. You know, he says it's perfectly fine to judge him for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with that. And it should be part of the calculation. When you're deciding whether or not to vote for Josh Fosche, his reckless driving conviction should be part of the calculus. There's nothing right. wrong with that.
But it's a very different crime. But
to me, it's not
Gardner.
A game ender. It's not a game ender. Like I was out outside of some girls' dorms, walking up and down, multiple law enforcement officers observing me. I had my pants undone. Before going out, I'd taken my belt off. I'd put my wallet on my seat. Precautions you take. When you know that you might lose your wallet when you drop trow. I mean, that's what he did was disgusting. What he did was inexcusable. And I fully expect Will Gardner. I hope he has nothing but success in the future. I hope he has. I hope he finds redemption. I think he, you know, whatever.
He
I mean,
definitely
he's
regrets
obviously
it.
He's seemingly done well since then. Mm-hmm. Right. He's got a family. He's got lots of kids. He's got a career and everything else. And that's great. But he's not fit for public office because of it. He never should have run. He knew what was on his record. He never should have run. He should have known better. Why he thought that this wouldn't come out is beyond me. I've heard it said that he felt that he had legal advice telling him that this wouldn't be a public record. You don't check. I mean, even Will Gardner thinking that public, not bothering to check.
That people weren't going to look.
Right? I mean, it shows a shocking lack of follow-through, a shocking lack of judgment. Why would you do this to yourself? Why would you do this to your family? You're the one who put yourself on the statewide ballot with this on your record. Without bothering to know whether or not that conviction was public record, what people would be able to find out. Will Gardner did that. And now some are urging him to stay in the race, and he could stay in the race. And if he does, he would pretty much hand that race to Josh Fosche. And honestly, Democrats won't feel this way. They should feel this way, but they won't. They should want Will Gardner out of the race, too, because the race should be about the issues, not about a flawed candidate throwing the victory to another candidate on a technicality or because he's splitting the vote or whatever. North Dakotans deserve a real competition in that race. What do you think? 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back. Rob Report 970 WDAY AM 93.1 FM. Jerry emails, appears there are thousands of Republican voters who shouldn't be voting. Will Gardner as an example. And then he does SMH. That's smack my head, right?
Shaking my head.
Shaking my head, right? What do I think? Smack my head. I was thinking like the face palm thing. Like,
right.
So you don't want to. You don't want to smack yourself when you're face palming.
No,
you get injured that way.
No,
don't smack yourself. Shaking my head. That's what that mm-hmm. means, I guess. I'm not very good sometimes with the internet acronyms. Okay. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at wday.com. Like I said, coming up next hour, Kelly Armstrong, U.S. House candidate, is going to be on. We'll talk about his race transitioning from primary to general election. Also, Kevin Cramer, he's in the same boat, but he's on for his weekly open phone segment. He call it. Kevin Cramer has been in the news a lot lately. I feel like we're going to have a lot to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
All the Trump stuff and everything else. So we'll talk with him about that coming up at 1:30, and certainly can welcome your phone calls. If you want to ask him questions, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at wday.com. my nephew just messaged me. He goes, gosh, you're old. Because I didn't know the shaking my head thing. Learn the lingo, Rob, he says.
I got your back for that one, Rob. You're good.
All right. You would think, I mean, for somebody who's made his living writing for the internet for 15 years, you think I would know some of these things a little bit better, but I don't. I just kind of gloss over them. I don't. I'm a big one on spelling things out. I don't know.
Like spelling them out phonetically to read or?
Yeah. Well, just writing what you mean and not using acronyms. That's mm-hmm. I'm a big proponent of that. I understand people do that with texting, but I'm weird. Speaking of which, in the last segment we were talking about the Will Gardner thing. It's funny. I just put up a post about, you know, all the work I did on the Will Gardner question this morning, calling the Secretary of State's office and everything. Here's a comment to that post, Ben. Speaking about the contingent of people out there who want Gardner to stay in the race, a guy named Philip writes, people love him and have forgiven him. he should stay in and accept the nomination. People are saying that. Now, I don't think it has to mean that you hate Will Gardner because you think maybe he shouldn't be in this race. I don't hate him. I've known Will Gardner for a long time. I think Will made a mistake back in 2006. I think he compounded that mistake when he decided to run for a statewide office in 2018 without telling anyone about this conviction and allowing everybody to get blindsided like that. I think he did a disservice to Republicans by not disclosing to delegates at the convention when they gave him their endorsement. He didn't disclose to them that he had this thing on his background. I mean, obviously, it impacts his electability. When you're asking people to say, hey, make me your candidate, they should get to know about you. You should disclose some of this stuff. Now, the since the whole fiasco with Gardner, the North Dakota Republican Party has, they've been taking a look at some of this stuff. They've been looking, taking a look at some rule changes. Among those rule changes is maybe doing background checks on candidates. You know, just simple, you know, I don't want to create a situation where we've got too tall of a barrier for people who want to run and try to get the Republican convention or the Republican endorsement.
No,
I like that it's an open process. Even though it sometimes lets some kooks, I mean, if you go to the convention, sometimes you'll see some people up on stage addressing the delegates who aren't very serious candidates. And that can be a little annoying sometimes. But for the most part, I say keep a wide door open, let them all in. But I think it's important for everybody to know what's in a person's background. You know, when the press does some of this, I broke the story about Paul Schaffner, who was in the U.S. House race, being convicted for soliciting a prostitute last year. I did that, but sometimes the press misses things. I think probably I'm kicking myself that I didn't find this conviction in Gardner's record either. But, I think when Gardner knew it was there, Gardner knew what it was.
Yep.
Gardner should have disclosed it. You know, I think the delegates at the convention deserve that. You know, and maybe going forward, the Republican Party is going to do some basic background check. I wouldn't be opposed to the political parties doing that. I think it makes sense. Just see what's out there. You know, do they have a DUI? Do they got some speeding tickets? What's out there? And then just let everybody know about it. And then people can decide if it matters or not. But this matters, and, you know, Gardner blindsided Republicans. He should absolutely not stay in the race. As of now, he is in the race. And I guess, we have until June 22nd when those results, the primary results from last night are certified to find out whether or not he's going to stay on the ballot. More to come straight ahead. U.S. House candidate Kelly Armstrong. This is the Rob Report, 970 WDAY AM, 93.1 FM. Don't go away. Welcome back, Rob Report, 970 WDAY AM, 93.1 FM. Hour two straight ahead here. In a moment, going to be talking with newly minted nominated. Actually, not newly minted. Well, I guess newly minted too, but newly nominated. That's the alliteration I want to go for. Newly nominated U.S. House candidate Kelly Armstrong. We'll be talking with him in just a moment. Also, U.S. Senate candidate, the current occupant of that House seat that Kelly Armstrong's running for, Kevin Cramer, is going to be joining me at 1:30 for our weekly open phone segment. If you want to talk to either of these gentlemen, you can call in at any time, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com, and tweet me, at Rob Port. Kelly, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Rob. Thanks for having me on. I don't know if I'm minted.
Not minted. Now, you're nominated, though. Got that
I am nominated. It was a great day yesterday.
It was a great day. So I'm looking. I mean, not a lot of competitive races on the statewide ballot. You know, most of these races were nobody unopposed. But it was interesting to me because your race was actually a four-way race. I mean, as it was presented on the ballot, it was yourself. It was State Senator Tom Campbell, who, of course, you defeated at the state convention, but he put himself on the primary before deciding to drop out and endorse you. Also, Tiffany Abetroth and Paul Schaffner, both of whom lost at the state convention but remained in the race. I was actually surprised at the number of votes that those other candidates got and wondered if some of those were protest votes against you. I was surprised that so many people voted for the other candidates. What did you make of that?
Oh, I think on a four-way ballot, if I had to get 57% of the vote, we were pretty excited about those numbers. But I mean, I think especially with Tom, it goes to show that how hard he worked. I mean, he spent a year campaigning, and how good of a candidate and good of a man he was that he's got that much support on the primary ballot.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like you. I mean, it was a decisive win. I mean, you by far got the most votes, and you won every single county in the state except one. Tiffany Abetroth took home her home county, Trail County. But other than that, you won statewide. What do you think led to that? I mean, what are North Dakotans hearing from you right now? At least North Dakota Republicans that they like so much.
Well, I mean, I've worked hard, you know, over the last several years, even as a Rolls Party chairman, to get out and know as many of them as possible. And ever since we got into this race at the end of February, we've been going 100 miles an hour to get out to talk, and I think more importantly, listen to people all across the state. So, like I said, we've always said the primary was a second step in a three-step process, and you got to win all three of them. So this was just, we won the convention, we won the primary, and now we got to go move forward to take our message to everybody and win the general election.
Yeah, well, you don't necessarily have to win all three of them. Doug Burgum lost the convention and won the primary and then won the general. So you can. There is a path without winning all three, but it helps to win all three. Now that this race transitions from the primary phase into the general election phase, I imagine we're going to see you and Max Schneider engaging each other a lot more. How are the dynamics of this race going to shape up? What are we going to see?
Yeah, I think for us, we're not going to change much. We've been going nonstop since we started, and we're going to continue to do that all the way until November. But you and I both know as we get closer and this goes on, it'll get a little punchier, and we're going to draw a contrast. You know, conservative, limited government, local government solutions are what's best for North Dakota. And I think I have a record and a message that brings that out, and I think that'll be a clear contrast between me and Mac.
Mac Schneider, recently there was a profile with him in the Grand Forks Herald, and I believe you did one as well, but basically an interview with the editorial board there. And I thought it was interesting because they went to Mac and they said, well, we asked Kelly Armstrong how he would define himself. And we asked him if he was a Trump conservative, and he told us he was. And then they turned around and they said, well, Mac, what are you? And Mac told them, he said, well, I'm an independent, you know, and he actually agreed with your description of yourself, Kelly. He said, I agree. Kelly is a conservative Republican. He's a Trump Republican. But I'm an independent, and I'll work with anyone, and I'll work across the line. What do you have to say about Mac characterizing the race that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would say that, too, if I had lost my election as the Senate minority leader 2 years prior in my home district and now have to try and win on the statewide ballot. The reality is that we have voting records, we have messages, we have what we will be getting out to the voters. And I just think that description's not accurate.
What about, because obviously one of you are going to get win. And by the way, if anybody wants to join in, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk@wday.com, tweet me @RobPort. Looking off in Washington, D.C. right now, we're seeing a lot of food fights. For instance, there's a big fight over DACA right now. What to do with DACA? Now, the way I look at it is President Trump has been fighting this in the courts, but trying to overturn President Obama's creation of the Dreamers program through executive order. Now, for some reason, courts have ruled that he can't do that. I don't entirely understand how one presidential administration can't overturn an executive order issued by a previous administration. The whole reason both presidents have been acting with executive orders is because Congress won't act. And there's a fight, even in really the divide is among Republicans in Congress in terms of what to do on illegal immigration. And Kelly, I ask you, what side of that debate would you be on?
Yeah, I support. Well, there's a lot to uncouple there, Rob. One is the executive order question, and I think your point is fair. I mean, I think one of the reasons these are going is because of the inaction in Congress. I'd prefer that legislation came out of the legislative branch, and things like this got a more up and down vote. But I've always been, immigration's a part of our platform, and you know, it's something I've dealt with. My wife is from Oslo, Norway, so nobody's a bigger fan of legal immigration than I am. But I think for the most part, Trump's got it right on immigration. Most importantly, let's secure the border, because until we secure the border, we can't start having these conversations. And I think there's even a couple votes on immigration now scheduled either for later this week or next week in the House. So there's some movement on it, and we'll see how it goes. But border security has to be first and foremost, because it's bleeding over into our jobs. It's bleeding over into another things. And immigration has been toxic for a long time in Washington, D.C., and we have to get working towards some solutions.
701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk@wday.com. Dreamers.com. What should we do with the Dreamers that are here? I know at one point the Trump administration was supportive of and realizing that these have been very tumultuous negotiations. You know, this issue is, there's a lot of fluidity to this issue. But, I mean, at one point the Trump administration was saying, listen, the quote-unquote Dreamers who are already here, let's give them a path to citizenship in exchange for getting some tougher border security. That sounds like a good compromise to you. Would you be on board for something like that?
It depends on the order and when. And what I'll say is all of those conversations have to occur after I believe that serious efforts and serious policy have moved forward to secure the border. I think there's a serious conversation to have about somebody who's been in this country since they were 3 years old, maybe doesn't even speak the language of their home country, has never been in trouble, has never done anything of that nature. I think that conversation absolutely needs to happen, and we need to figure out a solution for those people. But I don't think we can do any of it until Republicans primarily, but the country in general is happy with the movement as to securing our border.
We got a caller on the line, Russell. Go on, Russell. You're on with Kelly Armstrong. What's up?
Yeah, Kelly, I need to ask you a question. Don't you feel like Trump pretty backstabbed Canada and our allies? And he put North Korea on a pedestal. And I feel like our trade with Canada, I mean, they've been more than fair. They buy more of our goods than we buy of theirs. What do you have for a take on that?
Well, I'll start with, I mean, the Canadian, and, you know, when we're a commodity-based economy, as we are in North Dakota, I mean, when we're out on the ground talking to everybody, people think we need better trade deals. We need better trade deals with China. We need better trade deals in NAFTA, and we need those things. So as long as those negotiations move forward and get us better trade deals, I think it's a worthy goal. We have a huge trade deficit in this country. With regards to North Korea, if anything moves out of this that keeps us out of nuclear crisis, I think things are going well. I mean, I think that is a worthy goal, and I think how that has gone in the last couple days, I mean, it doesn't feel as tense as it felt 8 months ago, and if we can get anything moving forward on that, that actually comes to some real solutions that protect American citizens and the rest of the world from a nuclear North Korea, I think it's a worthy goal, and I'm glad he's trying.
As we mentioned earlier in the interview, we've really been in the primary phase so far. We're going to see you and Schneider engage each other more now that we're in the general election. But one area where Schneider's already been coming after you a little bit, Kelly, is the issue of trade and the issue of Trump's handling of some of these issues. Now, Schneider has been generally it's been interesting to watch North Dakota Democrats align themselves with the president. Who just an election cycle ago, they were describing as vile and unfit for office. Now Senator Heitkamp is like jostling to try to sit in the president's lap during bill signing ceremony. So that's a sideshow unto itself. But one area where Schneider has been vocally in disagreement with the president and says that you are too in line with the president is the issue of trade, is the issue of some of his handling. Now we have seen what President Trump just did at the G7 summit in Canada. I mean, that was very certainly much more raucous meeting of world leaders than we're used to seeing. Then, of course, went on to North Korea and did stuff there. So let me ask you first of all about the Canada situation, the G7. What did you think of the way President Trump handled that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, he handled it in the way, I mean, we'll see. The whole answer to all of this is what are our long-term agreements and what are our renegotiations work with? And if they come out better for the United States and they come out better for North Dakota, then we're going to support the process. But, I mean, these are the reasons President Trump got elected, in my opinion. You know, I've heard Max say that we should continue to work with the world organizations and create more sanctions on China. Those sanctions have been effective, so I don't know, he says something like 90% of the time. Well, that's also a failed policy because we've had a horrible trade deficit with China that has gotten worse and worse over the last year. So, I think one of the clear reasons, and this shows it, why President Trump got elected is because people want somebody to handle things differently and try and do things that protect America first.
Now, let's go to North Korea. Obviously, President Trump, I feel there's been a lot of progress there, and I'm very, very hopeful. Some people being critical, you know, saying that President Trump's been too glib, he's been too nice to the North Korean dictator. What's your view on that, President Trump's handling of that situation?
I think it's a worthy goal, and I think we've had more progress on that in the last 6 weeks than we've had in the last decade. And anywhere we get towards North Korea becoming a denuclearized state is not only great for everybody in the United States, but the whole world. So I'm happy these conversations are occurring.
Anything else? What are going to be the hot issues of the campaign? I mean, obviously agriculture. I mean, I think Schneider's already identified that. I know you certainly are concerned about that as well. But any surprises, you think? Any surprise issues going to come out of this election cycle as again, we gear up for the general?
I don't know. The nature of a surprise is you don't know about it until it comes up. So, I mean, I think things could happen in D.C. that will bring things more relevant on the campaign. I've said this on numerous times. I think the biggest surprise, and it's nice to see on the campaign trail, is how many people are really, truly concerned about the debt. You know, it's not an issue that always gets a lot of campaign time. And, it's not a hot button, real hard issue, but it's a really big concern, not only for our country's financial well-being, but for our national security.
Kelly, thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me on, Rob.
U.S. House candidate Kelly Armstrong, state senator from Dickinson. This is the Rob Report, 970 WDAY AM, 93.1 FM. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Rob Report, 970 WDAY AM, 93.1 FM, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. All right, so let's talk about President. And by the way, in the next segment, we're going to have Congressman Kevin Cramer on for his weekly open phone segment. You can certainly call in and get your questions ready for him. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. You can tweet me your questions as well, at Rob Port. But before we get to that, because President Trump, I think it's safe to say President Trump's been a big part of the election cycle in North Dakota, right, Ben?
Yes.
I mean, it's just not by anybody's choice. I mean, Republicans, Democrats, everybody's sort of scrambling to posture themselves in the context of President Trump. You know, and it's funny to hear Democrats talk, because on one hand they'll say, we're not fighting Trump. And, you know, Heidi Heitkamp goes so far as to portray herself as this, you know, Trump ally, who Trump likes better than Kevin Cramer, which, by the way, is something I wrote about a lot yesterday. You know, I think the Cramer campaign's been under fire a lot. They have not had a couple of good weeks. We'll talk about that with the candidate in the next segment. But simultaneously saying that Republicans are too aligned with Donald Trump. So I guess they're saying they're the Goldilocks, you know, they're the just right amount aligned with President Trump, which is just, it's absurd to watch the whole thing. But it does question how popular is President Trump in North Dakota, really? Well, we have some data, and I wrote about it at Morning Consult, or I wrote about it at sayanythingblog.com. It's from that Morning Consult poll. You've probably heard me talk a lot about it. In the Senate race with Senator Heitkamp's approval numbers. President Trump actually has lost a lot of popularity in North Dakota from the early days of his administration. His net approval number, which is the number of people, the percentage of people who say that they approve of him, subtracted, you know, minus the number of people who disapprove of him, his approval number, it was at 23% in January 2017. It was at 25% in March of 2017. Currently sits at 5%, though. There's just a 5% difference, just a plus 5% between his number of people who say they approve of Trump and the number of people who say that they disapprove. Currently at plus 5%. It's down, but we saw a sharp drop in May of 2017, and it's been pretty consistently down in that ballpark since then. So it's been steady over the last year, at least according to this one poll, but down significantly from early in his term. Now, what caused that? I don't know. I think a lot of these approval numbers, Ben, it depends on the context. And you can have a big difference between, you know, obviously North Dakotans voted overwhelmingly for President Trump when the choice was between President Trump and Hillary Clinton. When it comes to just an approval rating on Trump himself and not as contrasted with some opponent, you know, I think that's a different matter. And so I think maybe what you see in his approval number is the shift in that from, you know, obviously people still thinking of him in context of Hillary Clinton shortly after the election to, okay, he's our president now. How do we feel about him? I think there tends to be a big shift. Overall, you know, North Dakota is still one of the states that where President Trump supported strongly. And I think if you look at the way the candidates themselves, you know, particularly the Democrats. I mean, if the North Dakota Democrats didn't believe that President Trump was still very, very popular in North Dakota, they wouldn't be behaving the way they are. Heidi Heitkamp wouldn't be bringing up Donald Trump in every one of her ads. She wouldn't be defining, you know, bragging about how often she votes with Donald Trump. She votes with him 50% of the time. Which brings me also, I mean, this is the thing I want to talk to Kevin Cramer, because there's been a lot. There's been a lot. I mean, Democrats have been pushing this narrative for weeks now that, you know, President Trump is snubbing. And I honestly, I think it is a snub. I think when you look at President Trump deciding to hold a rally in Minnesota, but not North Dakota, I know the Cramer campaign says it's a scheduling thing. I don't know. That's what they say about it. But it's hard not to see it as a snub. I mean, in everything else that's going on right now, the person who can sort of bail out Kevin Cramer, now, I mean, and bailout's the wrong word. I shouldn't use that. That's too strong a word. But the person who can sort of help Kevin Cramer right now is President Trump, because the big attack on Kevin Cramer right now, what the Democrats are making hay with, what the national media is making hay with, is that, you know, Heitkamp gets along with Trump and Trump likes her, and meanwhile, Kevin Cramer's out in the cold. That's what the Democrats are pushing. That's what a lot of people in the media, and I think if you look at the facts, you look at the silence from the Trump administration, right? They're not dummies. They see what's going on. This is one of the most high-profile congressional races in the country. Why aren't they acting? Why isn't Trump tweeting about Heitkamp? Why aren't they doing something to throw a monkey wrench into this narrative that Democrats and their media allies are creating? You know, it's an issue. We could ask Cramer about it in the next segment, but it's, you know, I mean, that's, none of this would be going on. None of this would be as important as it is. Right. You wouldn't have Democrats posturing themselves with Donald Trump. You wouldn't have, you know, the national media making such a big deal out of Kevin Cramer's relationship with President Trump and the Trump administration if it wasn't for the fact that President Trump's very popular in North Dakota. And likely it's going to have an impact on the way North Dakotans vote. But we're going to talk with Kevin Cramer coming up next. It's the Rob Report, 970 WDOI AM, 93.1 FM. We'll be back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back, Rob Report, 970 WDOI AM, 93.1 FM, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. We got callers lining up with questions for Congressman Cramer. We don't have the congressman just yet. Sometimes he's a little late calling in because of votes or whatnot, or... he's a busy guy, but hopefully he'll be calling in here momentarily. Until then, certainly you can keep calling, emailing your questions in, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com. Let's see, we don't have the congressman yet, Ben?
We still do not have the congressman yet, Rob, but we do have callers lining up.
All right. Why don't we grab the first caller, and what we'll do is we'll get their questions, and then when the congressman's on, I can ask them. So let's go to the first caller. Go ahead, caller. What's up? Hello, caller. You're on.
Megan Wilson. That'll be awesome.
Oh, I guess they hung up.
I have no clue what happened there.
Okay. Well, do we have another caller?
No, but we have some emails here. I can send those to you.
Yeah, please do. 701-293-9000 if you want to get comments or questions in for Congressman Cramer. 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. Hopefully we'll have the congressman here in just a moment to get him on the line. And we'll ask him some of the questions that we got lining up for him. We have Cramer now. Congressman Cramer, how you doing, sir?
I'm very well. Thank you, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So right off the bat, let's get right to a listener question, because those are the most important ones. And again, if you want to call your questions in, 701-293-9000. If you want to email them in, talk at WDAY.com. You can even tweet them in at Rob Port. Chris asks, he goes, maybe to Donald Trump's credit, rather than sending a message of partisanship, he wants to signal to those who work with him will get credit for doing so, regardless of affiliation. I think Chris is talking about the situation with, and I was talking about it, this narrative, I think, which in some ways I think maybe has gotten out of control, where Heidi Heitkamp, I mean, Democrats are you know, sort of, well, Trump likes Heidi, and Heidi votes with him 50% of the time, and he doesn't like you, and you're feuding with the White House. And, I mean, the thing is there is an element of truth in that. You came on this show, and you took a shot at a member of the Trump administration, Mark Short. You took a bit of a shot of him that made national headlines. It is true that it's been kind of silence from President Trump and his administration on, at least publicly. I mean, the rest of us out here in the public, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Publicly, you know, there's been silence from the Trump administration. What's going on, Kevin?
Well, first of all, the Vice President of the United States came to Fargo, North Dakota to help raise $350,000 for my campaign and gave several speeches to groups of people supporting my candidacy on behalf of the president and himself. And so it really hasn't been silent at all. But I think to the point of the emailer, I mean, I think the emailer makes the point, right? That Donald Trump likes certain people, and if you're with him sometimes he's going to give you credit, and if you're against him he's going to be really tough on you, and he's done both to some people, and that's a credit to him. I don't see any real problem with him doing that. I think the feud, as you put it, is really more of an internal feud in the White House itself. And if you go back and read the stories, like from Politico, for example, and Washington Post, that's really the core of the story. While I happen to be an element in the middle of this, I've become sort of the symbol, if you will, of this, this natural tension, quite honestly, between, between the factions in the White House that have different jobs to do, and it's a tension that's always been there. You know, I was active with the, even in the party when Ronald Reagan was president and Haley Barbour was the political director, and as back as I can remember, there's been that tension between the legislative people and the political people, legislative people having to get legislators, and to their credit, they have to spend a lot more time trying to coax people who don't naturally do the right thing that they ought to do the right thing, and the reality is. Guys like me who already naturally are aligned with things like tax cuts and rollbacks of regulations and national security and homeland security and pro-life issues, I don't need a lot of attention from those people. So naturally, they spend more time with people who are more difficult to convince. So you look at somebody like Senator Heitkamp, who had an 88% voting record with Barack Obama, and she only gets about 50 or so percent with this president. I think that's the real disparity that we'll be talking about in the campaign. It has nothing to do with Barack Obama or Donald Trump. It has everything to do with what's important to North Dakota. And on that basis is how we'll be judged.
We got a caller on the line. Stacy, go ahead, Stacy. What's up?
Hi, Mr. Sammer. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Congratulations in order on your primary win.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm calling about this kerfuffle with the Trump and Heidi Heitkamp. Do you think that Mr. Short is behind? Because now Politico is saying that prosperity for Americans for prosperity are behind the ad for Heidi. Do you think that they have anything to do with that?
Well, I think what Stacey's saying, and Stacey, you could correct me if I'm wrong. Mark Short used to work for the Koch brothers. The Americans for Prosperity is a group that is a part of the Koch brothers network. Stacey, mm-hmm. are you saying that maybe there's some interplay there between the Koch groups and Mr. Short against Kevin?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
I guess I've not heard that theory, and I would seriously doubt it, because I think for the Koch network, I just don't see them conspiring, if you will, with the White House, or the White House conspiring with the Koch network. To the Koch network's credit, so the Koch PAC supports me, and they've double maxed out, and the AFP spent a bunch of money on an ad, going after Senator Heitkamp for her vote against the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which was, may have been a fatal vote on her part, considering how well it's turned out for America and how well it's turned out for North Dakota. On the other hand, they wanted to say thank you to her for her vote for something that it was easy for me to vote for. I voted for it multiple times before the Senate finally passed it in an election year, and that was a banking regulation. And so to their credit, they support policies, not necessarily people, and that's what the Koch network does. So I don't But I just can't imagine, and I might be wrong. Maybe you have. Maybe I haven't gotten cynical enough yet. But I certainly don't. I wouldn't have any evidence. I wouldn't even really, you know, I wouldn't even really speculate that the two would be coordinated. No.
Thanks for the call, Stacey. Yeah. Let's move on. Christine has a call. Go ahead, Christine.
Hi, Congressman. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to talk about health care. I get so worried every time the issue comes up. I have a pre-existing condition, and I heard that the Trump administration is saying that coverage for pre-existing conditions is unconstitutional. Where do you stand on this issue? Do you think conditions like mine should be covered?
Well, first of all, I do believe that conditions, I don't know what yours is, but pre-existing conditions should be covered, and that's why I've always supported healthcare legislation that mandates the coverage of pre-existing conditions. With regard to the question, I don't think the Trump administration has said that pre-existing conditions are unconstitutional. I think what the Trump administration has done is they're not defending defending Obamacare against lawsuits on its constitutionality. I think Democrat partisans have chosen to pick one item within Obamacare and pull it out and say that therefore the Trump administration doesn't support coverage of pre-existing conditions, when I think clearly they do. The president himself lobbied hard for passage of the American Health Care Act, which guaranteed coverage for pre-existing conditions, and he strongly encouraged passage of Graham Cassidy in the Senate, which also covered pre-existing conditions. So there's no evidence that I've ever seen that the administration doesn't support pre-existing conditions. They simply are not going to defend Obamacare in court. And I don't think that anybody's even challenged directly the constitutionality of pre-existing conditions, but rather the law in general.
I want to keep going here. I want to ask you a question, and this news just dropped. Maybe I don't know if you've heard about it yet, Kevin, but the Hill newspaper is reporting the Democratic National Committee will no longer accept campaign donations from fossil fuel companies.
Yeah.
The DNC's I'm quoting now from the article. The DNC's resolution was first introduced by Christine Pelosi, a member of the committee and the daughter of House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi. It was introduced as a way to connect with grassroots voters and emphasize the party's stance on environmentalism. Now, this is. I realize it's an election year, so Heidi Heitkamp is now an independent.
Right.
But when she shows up, on the ballot, she'll be a Democrat.
Yeah.
This is her party doing this, Kevin. What do you make of this?
I think this is a very clear illustration of why the Democratic Party in North Dakota is almost non-existent. And the tragedy for many grassroots North Dakota Democrats, many of whom are friends of mine, many of whom support me, they've sort of lost their blue-collar, middle-class America, middle America, middle-class Democratic Party, and this is why. And what's really really unfortunate, I think, for Democrats in North Dakota is that their own leadership has adapted to this. This isn't just simply a Democrat National Committee thing that they get to distance themselves from. They've embraced this silliness along with identity politics, and it's really left them on an island in many respects. So, I shouldn't chuckle, but I do have to admit I find it somewhat amusing that somehow there's a certain, you know, industry, well, like, what's next? Does that mean manufacturing is next? Because, you know, manufacturing uses a lot of natural gas or fossil fuels to create their products. Is it the transportation industry? Are they not going to take anything from the airline industry or the automobile industry because they burn, fossil fuels? It's on the verge of just silly, to say the least.
Certainly. We got a caller on the line. Dana, you're on. Dana, what's up?
Yeah, congratulations, Congressman Kramer.
Thank you.
And I have a question. Can you fill us in on what the situation is with the trade agreements with China on ag products?
Sure. No, great question. I know pretty much as you guys do at this point. There are a couple of things at play, and one of the more specific ones, of course, centers around this 301 investigation. I expect by the end of this week, the 301 investigation conclusions will be made public, if not late this week, probably early next week. And what that is that centers around China's theft of intellectual property. And they've been doing it for decades. They make it a requirement for technical companies and manufacturers to do business with China. They require them to, you know, to release their intellectual property to them. It's theft is what it is. So a lot of these other tariffs deal directly with a retaliation of that effort. Here's my hope, just for what it's worth, and what I've encouraged the administration to do, and I even testified at the hearing on this very topic to the USTR, the U.S. Trade Representative, and that is that tariffs are an okay, I suppose, trade negotiating tool, but they're a lousy trade war weapon. And so we're right now in that balancing point somewhere between a negotiation and a war, and I just don't want to see a trade war. I applaud the president for wanting to get a handle on this because no president before him has. They've just let these other countries run all over us, and it's a national security risk. It's an economic security risk, and he's inherited the can at the end of the road. So I applaud his goals, but I am somewhat concerned about the use of the tariffs and the aggression, the aggressive use of them. But at the same time, this is an America First president doing exactly what he said he was going to do, and he got elected saying he was going to do it. So applying pressure to the bad actors is noble as long as we don't go into a protracted trade war.
A couple minutes left. You know, earlier in the program and certainly on the blog yesterday, I it looks to me like a snub. Now, Kevin, your campaign is telling me I'm all wet about this,
but it looks like
a snub to me because we had the New York Times reporting that President Trump is going to be visiting Minnesota and North Dakota. The Trump through his campaign announces that he is going to in fact be holding a rally in Duluth, but not in North Dakota. Now, I contacted your campaign about it, and they said. First of all, when I spoke with one member of your campaign, he was kind of blindsided by it. And then later on, they said, well, it's a scheduling thing. I'm a little dubious as to that. That looks a little bit like a snub, a little bit feeding into this narrative that the Democrats are pushing that this is. And again, all I could do is write about what I'm seeing from the outside.
Sure.
Why is President Trump visiting Minnesota and not North Dakota?
Well, I do think it's a scheduling thing. The Minnesota trip, as I understand it, is an in-and-out trip. And that's based as much on his schedule as anybody's. But to be honest with you, if he was coming to North Dakota in the middle of next week, we're going to have two big immigration bills and a farm bill on the floor. You know, at least that's the plan now. It's sometime in the middle to the end of next week. That's a higher priority for me, frankly, than a presidential visit. So we'll have to see. I have no doubt the president is coming to North Dakota once, maybe twice, perhaps as many as three times. I would expect the vice president will come back. But all of that is, and just so people understand, I really want him to come. I think he's great for our party. I think he's great for our country. I think it's obvious he's been great for our country. And I love his message, and he's going to deliver it, you know, hopefully to very large crowds somewhere in North Dakota. But my success in the campaign is dependent not on him, but it's dependent on me being able to draw the distinctions between Senator Heitkamp and me as it relates to policies that are important to North Dakota, things like tax cuts and, you know, rollback of regulations and health care and trade and There are a whole bunch of issues, and not the least of which is national and homeland security, where there's a very, very stark difference between her and me. So, I don't feel snubbed by the president in any way. I expect that he'll come to North Dakota. I hope he does. North Dakota's been really good for him and to him, and we've been, you know, provided a good backdrop for some of his policy positions, and I expect he'll be there.
One last question. I should have dropped this on you at the end, but we have
no problem.
A fight in DACA in the House.
Yes.
And what's going to happen? Where are you at on that?
Okay. Yeah, it's a great question. Here's where I am. I'm glad you asked it that way because I haven't seen the bills, but I've heard a lot about both of them. We had a pretty good briefing on them this morning. The draft, I believe, of both bills will be released sometime later today or tomorrow. But having been in on it now for about a week on the serious discussions between the various players, there are two things at play. One is that the conservatives among us want a straight up or down vote on what's known as the Goodlatte bill, and maybe you and I have talked about this before. And the Goodlatte bill is a pretty good representation of what the president wants in his four pillars, except that it's not as generous with DACA. So it eliminates chain migration, it eliminates the visa lottery program, it builds the wall and provides funding for that. And then it has a path to legal status for the 700,000 or 800,000, you know, registered DACA recipients. That bill is likely to fail. I'm an original co-sponsor of it, Rob, and I support it, and I'll vote for it. But that's the bill that the Freedom Caucus wanted a vote on before they you know, vote for a farm bill. So I think they're going to get that. I don't know that that will pass. I have my doubts. There's another bill that's a version of that that's more of a compromise with moderates. And that bill does the same things that I talked about at the top, chain migration, visa lottery, you know, $25 billion for the wall. And then for DACA, it provides an opportunity for permanent legal status or even citizenship, but not first in line. It takes advantage of the other visa programs that would be reduced or eliminated, if you will, chain migration and particularly the visa lottery, and it replaces those with a pathway for DACA recipients. But there's two things that I think are really important
here.
Yeah,
we got to wrap up
sure.
real quick.
Okay, one is that the $25 billion on the wall has to be spent before that kicks in. So that's a safeguard that conservatives like. And the second one is that the DACA recipients, in order to get into one of the visa programs, has to either work for 4 out of the 5 years or get a 2-year degree or a certificate or a 4-year degree or some education. So there's a high bar for them to take advantage of it. So there's a lot of safeguards. And one or both of those bills will be voted on next week. One may pass or they both may fail, but at least that's the summary of the two issues.
All right, Kevin, I appreciate your time, as always.
Always my pleasure. Thanks, Rob.
It's Congressman Kevin Cramer. We'll wrap up the show right after this. Don't go away. We went a little long with Congressman Cramer, but not a lot of time here. I think it's interesting. I mean, eventually the Senate race is going to move on beyond, you know, posturing around Trump, right? I mean, eventually, Ben, it's going to have to be about the issues and how these people are going to vote. Also because in the next 6 years, we may have a new president, right?
Right.
I mean, that's the Senate term's long. You know, in 2 years, we'll have a presidential election. 4 years after that, we'll have another one. So, you know, there's going to be two elections, you know, within the space of the Senate term. So it's, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think all the jockeying around Trump, though, is pretty interesting, particularly given where Democrats are. And also, I don't think this is good news. The DNC, the Democratic National Committee, as much as Senator Heitkamp likes to distance herself from her national party, voting to reject contributions from the fossil fuel company. What's next? Like Congressman Cramer says, what's next? We're not going to take from manufacturing. We're not going to take from the Teamsters because their vehicles burn oil. I mean, what's silly? That's it for me. Jay Thomas Show straight ahead. You can always catch her here 12 to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday on 970 WDOI AM 93.1 FM. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at sayanythingblog.com. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again.